Sportsnet 960 The Fan is CFAC 960 AM Calgary, a Rogers Sports and Media radio station. You're listening to The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I think it's pretty safe to say the tickets for round two are a hot commodity. A lot of entries in. Thank you to everybody who entered into the draw for game one, which goes tomorrow, Flames and Oilers. You get two lower bowl seats if you're the lucky winner. We'll announce that winner, as we mentioned, on the program tomorrow. So we'll give you a few hours to get your plans in order and make your way to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Puck drop for game one tomorrow is at 7:30. It's the scheduled puck drop, but as we know, it's probably closer to 7:45 by the time the puck actually drops at the Scotiabank Saddledome. My name is Will Nault. Logan Gordon is here as well. We're inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. A lot of talk in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll continue that in a little bit, but a little side. We're taking the side road, and we're going to change it up a little bit and go down the world of golf. It is Major Week. The PGA Championship will begin in a couple of days. And when we talk golf on this program, we bring on one guest and one guest only. You know him, you love him, is Adam Stanley, golf analyst and reporter. He joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Stanley, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great. How are you? Probably not as buzzy as you guys are, though. Battle of Alberta coming up should be great.
It should be outstanding. And, you know, how dialed in have you been on the hockey playoffs? I know you've been traveling and doing some things, but I guess first and foremost, are you a giant hockey fan, or are you just kind of a, how would you put it, a middle-of-the-road hockey fan?
No, I'm a middle-of-the-road hockey fan. I mean, it's... I live in Ottawa now, and we have our own issues, but whenever Ottawa does actually play well, it's good for the town, and I guess we'll have to see when the next time that is, when that actually happens. But born and raised in Toronto, spent my whole life there, and obviously a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and we had a tough little go. I was on a little road trip with a couple buddies of mine that was 3 years in the making this past weekend, and we got all pumped up because we had a game Thursday night right when we arrived, and we were ready to celebrate, and that didn't happen. And then Saturday night, we were still down there on our vacation, and we were ready to celebrate again, and that didn't happen either. So a little heartbreaking there.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was a little jealous of some of your seafood pictures. It looked outstanding. And if you haven't been, I know that my old neighbors here in Calgary moved to Maine for a couple of years. I do hear nothing but good things, and I think you would endorse that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was incredible. We went to Portland, Maine, which of course is Portland, Oregon as well on the West Coast. But yeah, 3-4 years ago, Portland, Maine, little town, was named by Bon Appetit magazine, the food magazine, as the best restaurant city in America, which was crazy. So my buddies and I, a couple foodies, we wanted to head down there, and COVID obviously had other plans for the last couple of years, but we finally made it happen. And yeah, it was very much worth it. It was incredible.
We're doing a little sidetrack, but that's okay. We'll get to golf in a second. If you did have one meal to pick and eat for the rest of your life, what would it be? Like you just said you're a foodie. So what's number one on the list for you?
just one meal. I think if I had to go one meal, and I would make it like super comforting, and I would have to go with like chicken parmesan or something like that. Just like homemade, doing it upright, bottle of red. I guess that's more of a last meal kind of thing versus a meal for all time. But I think I'd still have to go with some kind of homey filling kind of thing like that.
I love it. But you
were in Hawaii. Did you have any like poke or anything like that? Or what
my girlfriend had poke. I did not go down the poke road. I went down the sushi road, which was still a very good decision on my part. But it was outstanding. And the one thing I didn't get to, which I'm okay with. I'm a huge calamari fan. I didn't have any in Hawaii, but it was still a good time. I would love to go back at some point, but yes, quite enjoyed it, and glad that you and I were both able to get some R&R here recently. And you're dialing up for Major Week. We're dialing it up for round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Let's talk in your wheelhouse, Adam. I guess, you know, it is a major week. Where does the PGA Championship rank for you amongst the majors in golf?
You know, it's funny. Obviously, the PGA Championship doesn't really have the historical kind of catch-all vibe that the rest of the majors have. But maybe Masters aside, even including the Masters over the last decade or so, the PGA Championship has, absolutely delivered some of the best finishes in major championship golf that we've seen. Even, you know, last year, I'm sure we'll talk about Phil Mickelson in a bit, but, you know, Phil Mickelson, for all the problems that he's had this year, I mean, that dude went out and crushed, you know, the best field in golf at age 50 last year. And that is an incredible accomplishment worth celebrating. And that only could happen, you know, at the PGA Championship, because, and I guess it could at the Masters too, because Phil's won that one. But, you know, Phil went out and he did the darn thing last year. And the year before that, you know, it was the COVID one, and there was no fans. And Colin Morikawa, in his very first PGA Championship, goes out and wins it with arguably the shot of the year, that tee ball on 16. You know, it was a par four and he hit driver to like 10 feet or something like that. So those are just recent examples. You know, Brooks Koepka going back to back the last couple of years as well, kind of in that mix and in that conversation. So this one, no matter really what happens, the PGA Championship has delivered the last couple of years. And as a golf fan, that's all you really want when you turn on the TV on Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to it, and hopefully it's you know, maybe a red and white flag on that leaderboard. Three Canadians in the field, Adam. Let's catch everybody up maybe on their individual seasons and how that might lead into the weekend. Let's start with Mackenzie Hughes.
Yeah, Mackenzie Hughes and I actually spoke on the phone this morning, and just for a little bit. It was funny. His caddy is another Canadian, Jace Walker, and Jace ended up following Colin Morikawa on Sunday in the afternoon. He was kind of inside the ropes, taking a few notes, and Jace is there. Colin Morikawa makes a hole in one on the par three, sixth hole. So Jace is standing there seeing that happen. Next day, Tiger's rolling around. Tiger's playing nine holes. Mackenzie Hughes hasn't arrived yet. Jace Walker just is like, well, I'm going to go follow Tiger for a little bit, taking some notes, doing his thing. So Jace is inside the ropes with Tiger Woods. I talked to Mackenzie Hughes this morning, and he's like, yeah, Jace has walked more holes with Tiger Woods than he has with me so far this week. So Jace, his caddy, is off to a very nice start. But, yeah, Mackenzie told me, you know, listen, last week he missed the cut. The week before, he finished in the top 10. It was his first top 10 on the PGA Tour in quite a few months now, actually. But, you know, that result last week isn't really indicative of kind of where he's at. Mentally, he said physically he feels great. Mentally, you know, he's just trying to knock the cobwebs out, for lack of a better description. You know, he's way more comfortable on major championship stages these days than he has been in the past. And, you know, just kind of getting dialed into the moment. You know what I mean? Like he didn't play well last week, but this week, you know, he knows exactly what he needs to do. He knows what he needs to do to play well. He knows what kind of scene he's getting into at a major, and just kind of getting over that mental hurdle and knowing what kind of week this is going to be is the key for him, he tells me.
Meanwhile, Adam Hadwin's had a pretty good season, four top 10 finishes. What about him leading into the PGA Championship this weekend?
Yeah, I think him and Mackenzie Hughes are kind of in the same boat, certainly as it relates to their games. You know, it's pretty comparable in terms of where they're at in all those key strokes game categories, you know, off the tee and around the green. And you're right, Adam Hadwin, a couple months ago, I think it was in March, that's when he had the stretch run of three top 10 finishes all in a row. Now, he's missed his last two cuts, so he's kind of having a bit of a give and take over the last month or so, after having a really spectacular month in March and through to early April. But, you know, he did not play in the Masters, so this is his first major championship of the year. And again, this is just a guy who kind of needs to readjust to the stage that is major championship golf. And he and Mackenzie and Corey Connors played a practice round a couple hours ago, kind of through nine holes in the early afternoon in Tulsa. And I'm sure he kind of leaned on those guys a little bit.
Well, and one of those guys who has had some success at majors, hasn't won, but coming off another top 10 finish at the Masters. Of course, a lot of people, when you talk about who you're going to put your money on for a Canadian at the PGA Championship or just in the PGA right now to win, it's probably going to be Corey Connors. What's your thought on him leading into this tournament on Thursday?
Yeah, I think, again, it's going to be more of a mental thing for Corey in terms of competing this week. You know, we as Canadians, even casual sports fans, because they're tuning into the Masters, which is the crown jewel of our sport, you know, they've seen Corey Connors finish in the top 10 the last 3 years, something that a Canadian hasn't done for 60 years. So we're talking about an all-time performance streak for Corey Connors at the Masters. This is obviously a different major at a different golf course, but early reports are saying that Southern Hills Country Club, the renovation of Southern Hills, which is going to look a lot different than it did in 2007 when they had this tournament the last time. It feels very Augusta-like. So somebody like Corey Connors that has that, that you know, ball striking, just out of this world ball striking, is going to play well this week. You know, if you miss the green, you're going to be in trouble. Chipping's going to be at a premium. Corey's chipping game is fabulous, but his iron game, the approach to the green game is even that much better. So I don't really see him having to do all the chipping and losing strokes from that side of things. So, you know, if you are interested in, you know, withdrawing a couple of bucks here and there, you know, an auto top 10 by Corey Connors this week, maybe one of those things that you think about if you're into that sort of thing.
He is Adam Stanley, all things golf, joining us right now on the big show on Sportsnet 960. The PGA Championship gets going at Southern Hills in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Thursday. Okay, you mentioned the name Phil Mickelson, and there's a lot around that name in the world of golf in the last half a year. And, of course, he is the defending champion of the PGA Championship, will not be in the field, and some disappointed. It feels like a bit of a split on that in terms of him not being there, but I guess the floor is yours on Phil Mickelson, and I understand it. Tiger Woods certainly had some criticism towards Phil today at his press conference.
Yeah, and I think it was less about, you know, Phil as the person, and he kind of made that clear. He said, you know, there was nothing personal man-to-man about this, but yeah, Tiger has not reached out to Phil. Phil has not reached out to Tiger. Tiger just feels a certain way about the legacy of the PGA Tour, and yeah, he and the PGA Tour have had some disagreements in the past, but Tiger's very much into what the PGA Tour has done and will continue to do moving forward. And he came right out and said that Phil and he disagreed wholeheartedly on that. So it is, from a golf perspective, you take the politics out of it, which is becoming more increasingly difficult these days, but you take everything out of it and you realize that the defending champion at the PGA Championship is not going to be here for the very first time out of a non-injury situation. Tiger Woods was one, and then Ben Hogan, who got hit by a bus, was the other one who didn't come back and defend their PGA Championship title, and now we have Phil Mickelson. So, you know, how whatever this actually was, a suspension, or if the tour just put Phil on ice for a little bit. You know, the PGA of America, they came out with a statement that said that they would have welcomed Phil back this year. There's no doubt about it. His accomplishment last year was incredible. It's going to go down in history as one of the all-time greatest accomplishments by a golfer in a moment that shouldn't have happened in any way, shape, or form. But now you could also say that his comments shouldn't have ever happened either. You know, this is a guy who is not afraid to act like he's the smartest guy in the room, and sometimes that backfires. And this was certainly one of those moments when that backfired. And we don't know when we're going to see Phil Mickelson again. And since the PGA Tour declined all of the applications for that Saudi-backed Golf League event happening the week of the RBC Canadian Open, and we know that Phil applied for one of those, unless he's going to go wholeheartedly and fully against the PGA Tour and just say screw it and go tee it up over there again, we may not see him until God knows when. You know, it could be the U.S. Open, it could be later, it could be, you know, at the end of this year. So from a golf standpoint, tough to not see Phil Mickelson come back and defend that magical title from last year. But from a personal and professional side of things, you know, what he said was wrong, in my opinion, and I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see when he does reemerge.
You mentioned the statement from the PGA America. I mean, have we heard much from the tour itself? Because it seems like, as you mentioned there in your answer, in terms of the suspension, put him on ice, like, it's been very quiet, it feels like. Have we had anything from the PGA Tour on Phil Mickelson's status and where things are at since that initial release when this all came about with those comments? I mean, it feels like it's been very quiet, and that probably speaks to what you're just talking about in terms of don't know when you'll see him again.
Yeah, exactly. I believe Jay Monahan said that he and Phil texted a little bit when Jay Monahan did his annual media avail at the Players Championship. So there was, you know, some discussion at that point. His agent put out the statement about Phil applying for the release to play in the LIV Golf, the Saudi-backed Golf League event, the week of the Canadian Open. So we haven't really heard much then. You know, I was at the Canadian Open Media Day a couple weeks ago. There was no specific conversation about Phil Mickelson, but there was some conversation about the Saudi Golf League stuff. Just that, you know what, the PGA Tour is our partner and we're fully committed to this and we're not worried about, you know, the impact to our field. But no, you know, to make a long answer short, no, the PGA Tour hasn't said anything. So it really does remain to be seen. You know, we haven't really seen much of Phil and his camp. He's kind of kept things pretty close to the chest. And, you know, this week, the book by Alan Shipnuck that caused all these things, where the comments were put in originally, it comes out this week officially. And I think that, you know, had Phil played, he would have had to face a lot of questions and kind of face the music this week, and it would have been a big time distraction. So maybe we'll see him soon. Maybe we'll see him in a long time. But one thing's for sure, he's not teeing up this week to defend his title at the PGA Championship.
Talked about the Canadians off the top as we focus back in on the PGA Championship and those that are playing. A lot of eyes, including yours, Adam, will be on that power group of Jordan Spieth, Tiger Woods, and Rory McIlroy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what else are you going to watch? I don't think there's going to be much.
Sorry to the other groups. No one's going to be watching you. I apologize.
Yeah, when you were asking me that question, I was like, yeah, we are going to be watching that group. But I think for a lot of good reasons. I kind of feel, I will say, I feel bad for Jordan and for Rory a little bit. I mean, they're big boys. They've won majors before. They've played with Tiger before. They've had total crazy groups cheering on just them and, you know, their playing partners in the past. But, I mean, these are two guys that kind of need this major, and they're going to be, like, thrown right in the fire pit, you know, for Thursday and Friday. Jordan Spieth. I mean, we haven't even talked about this, but Jordan Spieth is going for the career Grand Slam this week.
Yeah.
The PGA Championship is the only major that's eluded him up to this point in his career. So, you know, he's got that going for him. Rory, of course, is still in the midst of an 8-year major championship drought. Hasn't won a major since 2014. He's coming into this week off a 5th-place finish. The last time he teed it up, and of course the runner-up result at the Masters when he shot 64 on Sunday, tied for the lowest final round in the history of that tournament. So he certainly has the major mojo going for him, but hasn't won a major in 8 years. And then, like I said, Jordan Spieth is gunning for the career Grand Slam, and those two guys are paired up with Tiger for the first two rounds. And I don't think there's going to be all that many fans on site at Southern Hills that aren't trying to follow that group.
No doubt. Maybe it'll provide some good vibes for the other groups that won't have the massive crowd following them around. Would not be a golf conversation, Adam, if I didn't ask you about Scottie Scheffler, of course, the winner of the Masters. I believe, if I'm correct, he's only played once since then at the AT&T Byron Nelson last week and finished 15th. He didn't win, so that means he won't win the PGA, right? Like, his winning times are over.
Winning's done. That's it. He won the 4 times. He's
That's
more
it.
Of a
Sorry,
first
Scotty.
Quarter kind of guy. You know, he won the 4 times in the quarter of the year. Rest of the game, he's on the bench. No, it's interesting because you kind of can't help yourself and think about all these other storylines. You know, John Rahm, is he going to win his second major? Justin Thomas, he hasn't won a major in 5 years. Is he going to win his second major? We had Rory, we had Jordan, we had Tiger, we had Phil, who's also not here. But then you kind of think, oh, yeah. The number one player in the world is number one by a long shot. He's already won 4 times this year, and he played a practice round in screaming rain at Southern Hills a couple weeks ago and shot 64 like it was nothing. So who knows? Scottie Scheffler, he certainly has got the game built to contend, compete, and to win the PGA. He's only played 2 in his career, and he's finished tied for 8th and tied for 4th so far in his young tenure at the PGA Championship. So, you know, number one in the world for a reason, reigning Masters winner, coming into this week with a lot of momentum and just things that are kind of making you think, well, if he does do it, it wouldn't be all that surprising.
Who else you got your eye on going into the weekend, Adam? I know that certainly the field is stacked. You can kind of pick a name out of a hat and make a case for them to be in contention on Sunday. But anybody else that jumps off the page to you that you're like, I'm very curious to see how they play, whether it is because Southern Hills is tailor-made for their game or otherwise. But anybody you got your eye on here going into the weekend?
Yeah, I'd say definitely Brooks Koepka for sure. And the reason I say that is because we talked about all these other guys, and we kind of forgot that Brooks Koepka, who has never missed the cut at the PGA Championship and who won in 2018 and 2019, Absolutely loves the way that the PGA of America sets up their biggest championship. And, you know, he had a pretty funny moment on social media earlier today. He was supposed to do his press conference at 10:30 in the morning. He ended up getting there at 11:30 in the morning because he locked himself out of his courtesy car. And he had to get some staffer from the PGA to come to his house and to unlock the courtesy car with another set of keys and bring him to the golf course, which I thought was pretty funny. But he gets there, says this thing about the has a couple chuckles about being locked out. Then he gets right down to business and just says, love the way the course is set up. Love the way I'm playing. Know exactly what I need to do to win this week. And you just think like, okay, fine. Here's the guy that's won the Wanamaker a couple times, has all the tools, and is not afraid of the golf course, the competition, the fans, the conditions. I could go on and on. I think Brooks Koepka's odds this week are pretty long. And I think that they're good for somebody who should be in the conversation, but just hasn't quite been part of it up until this point.
You know what that means, folks. We're not encouraging you to do it, but check your latest sports book and maybe put a little shackles on Brooks Koepka for this weekend. He's Adam Stanley, All Things Golf. A couple more for you. Adam, you mentioned it. You were at Media Day, I believe, before your trip to Maine, but set us up. Yeah. We're a couple weeks away. We'll probably talk to you week of, but things looking good at St. George's for the RBC Canadian Open?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that we talk the week of. It's the big time return of the Canadian Open. I would be heartbroken if we didn't.
Yeah, we'll be having it back. But just, you know, in terms of being a couple weeks away, I mean, you mentioned it. Yeah. The one thing that I think a lot of people are always dialed in on with this tournament has become kind of, you know, the cult legend status because of the Canadiana attached to it. But the rink is back, sir.
Yeah. 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 So a couple of quick things. The build out is just going to be nuts this year. The property, St. George's Golf and Country Club, is basically 15 minutes from the CN Tower. Like, it's pretty close to downtown Toronto, and they're closing a main thoroughfare in downtown in order to make sure that, you know, the build out can be completed as needed. I think somebody tweeted that there's like 200,000 pieces of furniture that's going to be on site this year. And then at Hamilton in 2019, there was like 145,000 pieces of furniture, something like that. So it just goes to show you, and corporate hospitality is entirely sold out, and they have to add extra stuff like a couple weeks ago because of the demand. So people are very excited to have it back. It looks really cool. The golf course is going to be ridiculously difficult. They're trying to make it a U.S. Open light kind of scenario. So the rough, from what I've been told, is going to be about 4.5 inches long, and the greens are going to be ripping. And this golf course is, you know, top three in the country. Some may say it's even top two in the country. And the players are going to like it. The fans are obviously going to like it. And that rink hole, we don't know why it took so long for Golf Canada and tournament organizers to make this kind of thing happen. Maybe because it was like too on the nose as a Canadian Open to have a golf hole look like a hockey rink. But the buzz there is going to be just undeniable. It's the first hole that people are going to be able to see when they arrive on the property. So you can already sense how the excitement level is going to be for that hole. They've got the boards out already. It's just going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great to have that event back.
And the field's pretty impressive too. I believe six of the top 20 in the world going to be there. That's pretty good.
Six of the top 20 and four of the top 11. And if DJ plays well this week, it'll be four of the top 10. So not too shabby.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Before we let you go, we are on the verge, I believe, on the doorstep. Just quick thoughts on the fact that we're right around the corner from the U.S. Women's Open and what that field might look like from a Canadian perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely major. It is major championship season. Next week is the senior PGA, and of course, Mike Weir and Stephen Ames have a chance to take that one down. And then the week after that, the U.S. Women's Open. Then we've got the Canadian Open after that. Then the Men's U.S. Open, and I could go on and on. So this is definitely the busy time of the year. You know, it's been interesting. We usually talk about Brooke Henderson, and she's had a tough go the last little bit. She withdrew because of a non-COVID illness a couple weeks ago. Then she missed two cuts in a row at golf courses that really kind of weren't Brooke Henderson special. So she's taken a month off. She wasn't supposed to play next week at the match play regardless, but she decided to withdraw from last week's event as well and just kind of take a month to herself, a month of time, a month to just try to reset, get back to it, kind of refocus, and really sprint through the finish from June until November. You know, we're talking five majors in about a 7 or 8 week span on the women's game. So it's a lot of golf all in a row, a lot of different places in the world, and Brooks just wanted to be rested and ready to play at the highest level, and she'll be joined that U.S. Women's Open week by Motomi LeBlanc, who's from Quebec, who ended up qualifying for the U.S. Women's Open at a local event last week. So, yeah, two Canadians in the field for the U.S. Women's Open a couple weeks.
So is it going to be a busy season for Adam Stanley? Are you getting on a bunch of airplanes here? Like, what's happening?
we'll see about the airplanes. You know, I'm just going to drive from Ottawa to Toronto because that's easy enough. But week after that, going to Boston most likely for the U.S. Women's or the U.S. Open. So, yeah, it's airplane time. Yeah, it's just what the summer's all about.
Love it. Adam, great stuff, man. As always, enjoy this weekend. Should be a lot of fun. And, yeah, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks for the RBC Canadian Open. Can't wait for it. The first time it's back since 2019. Looking forward to that conversation. And this weekend should be a lot of fun. But thanks for giving us some time today.
No worries, man. Thanks as always.
There he is, Adam Stanley, all things golf. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam_Stanley. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winners. Check him out tonight for dine-in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. You can also give him a call for takeout and delivery, 403-248-3344. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Mott. We're back with more. Hour two of the Big Show rolls on next. Maybe a visit to Florida, the Battle of Florida. Kicks off tonight. We'll check in with one of those two clubs around the corner. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour two continues. Welcome back to the program live inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio here in Calgary. Battle of Alberta, Flames, Oilers tomorrow. Round two, game one, 7:30 start. We'll have all the action for you here, of course, on Sportsnet 960 and on Sportsnet and CBC on television. Right now, though, let's jump into it because Will Nault, Logan Gordon along with you. Our next guest is working hard today on game one in the Battle of Florida, and we appreciate him taking some time. And if you got a dip, Joe, I totally understand, but Joe Smith of The Athletic joins us right now. First of all, just the excitement in the state of Florida, Joe. This is the second straight year these two teams are going at it. Of course, we're talking and dialed in on the Battle of Alberta. We're so excited, but I can imagine it's very similar in Florida. The Lightning going for the three-time championship repeat, and of course you've got the Florida Panthers, who are the President's Trophy winners. Just the excitement level right now in Florida.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's big for the state of Florida and the growth of hockey. We've seen a huge growth in youth hockey the last, 4, 5, 6 years, and I think it'll only get better as these teams continue to go. I think rivalries are only born through playoffs, and that's why them playing back-to-back years really does a lot for that. You can see the hatred. Obviously, last year, game one was probably the most exciting game of the entire playoff run up there. And it really kind of set the tone for that playoff series. And it'll be another good one this time around. You know, the Panthers are like the favorites, the President's Trophy winners. But this could be another one of those long series, like the Leafs one.
It's just how much would that win boost this Lightning team? Everyone is focused in on a three-peat. They had to win that game to accomplish the three-peat. Now they've got the Panthers in their way. But it really feels like for a lot of people, you're wondering, you know, how much gas is left in the tank for this Lightning team with how much hockey they've played. But has the win in game seven and now getting set to play their top rivals, has that kind of, you know, rejuvenated this group a little bit and how hungry they are for this three-peat?
Yeah, well, they say that first round series is always the toughest, right? It's always almost unpredictable and everybody's healthy and hungry, and the Leafs provided such a huge challenge for the Lightning. But yeah, I think game seven provided a template for how, you know, their Lightning playoff hockey usually is. You know, they blocked 25 shots. They shut things down in the third period. Vasilevsky was the Conn Smythe version of Vasilevsky on like earlier in the series. Like, there was a lot of things that they did well that they should probably need to do the same thing at game one, provided that Braden Point doesn't play. As for being hungry, I think they played a lot of hockey the last number of years that they've talked about. You know, this is something that only happens once in your lifetime, a chance to go for three-peat. So I think no matter how mentally or physically, you know, you might be tired, there's a lot to play for, especially for the guys on this team who haven't won a Stanley Cup, and they're playing for them too.
His legacy and legendary status already at an all-time high, but you mentioned it, especially what he did in Game 6 and 7 against the Maple Leafs being kind of front of mind and certainly the most recent. But Joe, has what happened in the closing moments of that first-round series just added to the legendary playoff status for goaltender Andrei Vasilevsky?
I mean, I don't know if it needs even more to add to his legend. He's really a money player, right? And he's one of those guys when the pressure is the highest, you know, he shines the brightest. And it's such a security blanket for the Lightning and a kind of built-in kind of swagger for them, knowing they could make some mistakes and he's there for them. And the record speaks for itself. And I think he had five straight, you know, clinching games that were shutouts. The last game was a one goal, and he earned every bit of that performance against the Leafs, who were pushing hard. So I think that was back to the Vasilevskiy we're expected to see most of the year, and it'll be another key matchup with Bobrovsky this round. I think this still gives Lightning the advantage in this series with the goaltending, but if Vasilevskiy plays like he did in Game 6 and Game 7, this will be probably be a really good advantage for Lightning.
You mentioned it already in this interview. I think a lot of people not expecting to see Braden Point in this game tonight. Certainly give him all the credit in the world for trying to power through it in Game 7 against Toronto, but that leg injury just seemed to be too much. What's your thought on the Calgary native? And I guess just in terms of the void he leaves with this Lightning team, that's about as big as it gets, isn't it?
It is. I mean, he's a superstar, you know, like a top 10 player in this league, and obviously the number one center and kind of the engine for a lot of what they do offensively. And so, you know, it's hard. You can't replace him with one guy. He's a collective effort. And I think they play without him and Kucherov, you know, earlier in the year, and they ended up going 11-3. So they know they could find a way, but there's just no one guy to go in and be able to create and enter the zone like him, or be the bumper on the power play, or just, you know, be shut down center. So I think they're hoping that he makes some progress coming up in this series and can play, but we don't know yet if he's playing tonight. It's highly doubtful he is, but the key, if he is playing, how effective can he be? It's such a power he comes through his legs and the way he skates, and that's a part of his game. So interesting to see how that works, but he's definitely one of the most important players on this group.
It seemed so innocent. Was it something that he's been battling for a while? Did we have any indication? I know so many teams are tight-lipped about this kind of stuff, but has it been something that's been bothering him for a while?
I don't know. It didn't look like he was injured previously in the series. He was playing really well. I think that was just one of those freak things where he goes against the board, gets his leg caught, and all of a sudden he landed. You can tell he was in pain right away. So the way he was moving and engaged for most of the series, I don't think there was something lingering there. He might have had something lingering end of the year. He missed a couple of games, you know, body maintenance type deal. Mm-hmm. But when you watch him in the Toronto series, he was one of the best players on the ice.
He is Joe Smith of the Athletic, all things Tampa Bay Lightning and Panthers. Game 1 tonight from Sunrise, Florida. Logan?
Joe, I don't know really what else there is to say from your perspective when it comes to Lightning head coach John Cooper and what he continues to get out of this group year after year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's won every level he's been at for a reason. And, you know, I think more than X's and O's, just kind of handling personalities, handling the moments, like leading up to Game 7, he said all the right things and getting the most out of guys. The guys want to play for him because he pushes them and he's challenging, but he's also, you know, an easy guy to play for, easy guy to talk to, and he knows how to motivate people. So I think, you know, that's what his success has been, you know, culture over strategy, and have one hell of a goalie, like he always says, and he's done that really well over his career. And now he's putting himself potentially down the line when his career is over into kind of one of the Rushmore of coaches if he ends up kind of winning some more championships here.
Will mentioned, obviously, the status of Braden Point, and that's a key one for Tampa Bay. But who really needs to step up in his absence if it's more than just Game 1 that Point is out for?
Well, it elevates Anthony Cirelli to like a top-line center role, and he'll probably see a lot of Sasha Barkov in a matchup there or Huberto's line. You see Nick Paul, who was the hero in Game 7. He'll elevate it into more of a meaty role, you know, both penalty kill, power play, 5-on-5, so it won't just be one guy, but that obviously steps into the center depth that they have and all the other guys to kind of come through and contribute here and there.
As far as you know, the trade deadline acquisitions go for Tampa Bay, obviously Nick Paul stepping up in Game 7 has been huge, but what have we made so far of some of the guys that Brisebois has been able to bring in, likes of Brandon Hagel, et cetera?
Yeah, it took a little while for Hagel to get comfortable. I mean, he was 23 years old. He didn't think he could trade it, kind of a shock thing, and then it took him a while to get, you know, the minutes and the production, but he's been playing really well in that Leafs series. Again, he turned a corner, and Nick Paul has just been terrific since he came over. He's a perfect built for the playoffs. His size, his game, kind of the snarl, like he has really great hands, and he showed, you know, Game 7 scoring 2 goals. So he's been as advertised and probably one of the better pickups at the deadline for any team.
You expect the hatred between these two teams to rear its ugly head as early as tonight? They seem like groups that really just don't like any part of each other and are kind of excited to get these opportunities to go head-to-head.
I think so. I mean, you saw it in the preseason, from preseason on. I mean, from that last year's series to preseason to regular season, I think the key will be having that, you know, obviously the animosity, but also being disciplined. You know, these guys, both teams have really great power plays, and power play was a difference for Lightning in that last first-round series against the Panthers. So I think the Panthers talked a lot about making sure they're measured and disciplined in that respect. So,
how nice has it been for John Cooper, and I guess maybe for the whole organization, to really have Steven Stamkos back full-time as their cap? I mean, we know we go through, you know, we've seen different injuries at times, the Kucherov one, the Stamkos one, but for him to sort of ascend back to that level after what was a couple of tough years, and thinking back to that, you know, playoff in the bubble, how nice has it been to have him back leading the group through one of these playoff runs?
Well, it's kind of been like a career rebirth for him this year. I mean, he came in after a summer where he actually got to train versus rehab any injury. So he's healthy, mentally and physically, felt as good as he had in years, and he was motivated to make the Canadian Olympic team. And I still think he would have made the Olympic team if they would have gone over there with the NHL. But they needed him with Kucherov and Point out early in the season, and he's been back to the center middle position and at the center spot. And, you know, he had to elevate his play and be a play driver, and he did. And I'll be the reason why the Lightning are where they are right now.
You mentioned the goaltending is maybe one of the biggest gaps in this series when you talk about Bobrovsky versus Vasilevskiy, but maybe from a Panthers point of view, when you look at Florida, Joe, how do you see them stacking up best against Tampa? Is there an area that you feel the Lightning will really have to shore up or sort of keep an eye on when they take on this Panthers team and what could be a long series?
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, they're deeper than the Toronto Maple Leafs as far as their offensively, how they play. You know, Carter Verhaeghe has been a huge story for them, former Lightning, you know, forward who's been 12 points in the first round of the series. You know, I think for them it's just that overall, you know, get more out of their all four lines because they know it's a match against the Panthers' depth there. And, you know, just staying in control. You know, don't let penalties take you out of your game and be able to play the kind of hockey they've been able to play the last couple of years in the postseason. And if they play like they did kind of in Game 7, that relentless approach, I think they'll be fine.
Joe, just a couple more before we let you go. Appreciate the time, as always. Just kind of set us up for this series. And Logan mentioned the hatred. I think for a lot of people, has last year's series maybe set a bar that is going to be hard to achieve again here in this playoff series?
It will. I mean, the first time you go through a playoff series, it's hard to replicate that. But I think this one, it will be physical, but it won't quite maybe be as nasty. I think both teams know what's on the line. You know, Panthers is making their first run in a long time. The Lightning is chasing history here. So I think they want to be physical and engaged, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, line brawls every 5 minutes. So I think overall both teams are extremely talented and two of the best teams in the league. And it should be exciting and fun if you're a fan of hockey, just to see them go head to head, just like it'll be like the Oilers and Flames, them playing.
And before we let you go, I think you look at the first round and how it played out. The one thing that we know probably won't be the case again here in round two. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see a Florida Panther team execute 0% on the power play. That's got to be a point of focus for John Cooper, yeah?
It is. You know, the Capitals did a good job of kind of sagging in the middle of the box there and not letting them do cross slot passes. And, you know, obviously kept them to the outside. But, you know, the Florida's been working on that the last few days, and I don't think you're going to go through this whole series without Florida scoring a power play goal.
Joe, great stuff. I know you got to run, so we appreciate the time on a game day for you. Enjoy tonight. Enjoy this series, and we might be in conversation later on as this thing goes on. But thanks for this today.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
Here's Joe Smith of The Athletic, all things Tampa Bay Lightning, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. I think for a lot of people, obviously in this province, Logan, we are focused heavily on the Battle of Alberta, but that's got to be a clear-cut number two. Like, when you look at these four series, I don't know if anything ever comes close. All due respect to Colorado, St. Louis, Carolina, and New York.
Oh, yeah, this is... And with it being, you know, on the off days of Flames games and, you know, giving you something to watch on those... Not, you know, I think on game days, let's be fair, we're going to be dialed in on Flames, Oilers, not so much Carolina, New York. We'll keep an eye on it, but to have your days in between with your hockey watching schedule, this is it. This is exactly what you want. You want two powerhouses going at it, both of them in Stanley Cup windows, you know, fighting for territorial supremacy in Florida. And like Joe said, and we've talked about this before, Will, there are rivalries that develop for whatever reason, whether it's a big hit or words that get exchanged, something like that. These guys just hate each other. they're sick and tired, whatever it is. There's just bad relationships on both teams. And I go back to even thinking about the Flames games against Florida this year and remembering how involved Blake Coleman was. He's not even on Tampa anymore, and he still looked like he had a disdain for a number of Panthers fans, and I think players. Maybe he has disdain for the fans, too. I don't know.
That's just you.
Yeah, that's just me. But you know what? Like, it feels like there's that game mentality of, look, I'm not just going to beat you on the scoreboard. I'm going to physically – I want to physically beat you guys as bad as I can because they just don't like each other. They're sick of – they're at that point where, you know, they just want to run over the other team, and that makes for some really good hockey, and I'm excited for this series because I think it's going to be nuts.
If you're not ready to be physical, your chances of winning the series?
Not the best.
Not the best.
Not real good, nope.
Not the best. Flames and Oilers, Lightning and Panthers, two in-state or in-province rivalries. Can't wait to get them going. And, of course, one of those two gets going tonight. Battle of Florida kicks off round two and the evening at 5 p.m. on Sportsnet and CBC. It is a 7:30 start. St. Louis and Colorado from Denver. Your thoughts quickly on that series as, you know, the big storyline going in. Of course, St. Louis, a team that got over the hump on the first round. You know, since winning the Stanley Cup, they do it now. They're advancing to round number two. They get by the Minnesota Wild in six games, and now they play an Avalanche team who looked very much like they were out of reach for a majority of the season. But all of a sudden, you know, St. Louis and Minnesota felt like they couldn't lose for the final however many games of the season. And, you know, we always talk about momentum and playing well going into the playoffs. Well, St. Louis ended up as the third seed, 10 points back of Colorado. But the way they finished the year seemed to really carry over into the first round of the playoffs. They fell down in that series to Minnesota, switched goaltenders, and all of a sudden went on a run. And now they set things up with an Avalanche team who has not played in 8 days. I wonder how much of a storyline that is tonight in game one of this series.
I think a lot of people are going to be watching that and seeing if Colorado made good use of their time and how, you know, Jared Bednar prepared his group for what I think is going to be a tough series for Colorado. I think Colorado is the better team, but talk about the trouble that you have against these teams that have won. You know, St. Louis still has a lot of guys around from that cup run. I think last year was a pretty stark reminder to them when they got swept by this Avalanche team that you need to bring your best to win at this time of the year. And if you don't, you can be pushovers against some really good teams out there. The revenge narrative, I think, is a real one for St. Louis and all of this. And how does Craig Berube and his group respond to what was, you know, let's be frank, an ass-kicking last year at the hands of this pretty similar Colorado team. So this is going to be a really interesting one because Colorado didn't face a lot of adversity in that first round. Not that we expected a ton, but now I think the level of play is going to ramp up significantly between rounds one and two, whereas, you know, for St. Louis, I think they've already been in the thick of things. They beat a good Minnesota team in what was a battle, not maybe as intense as we thought it would be, but still a good series, right? I think St. Louis might be a little bit more used to the fire of the playoffs based on their first round experience compared to Colorado's, but I still expect a really good series between them. I think they're both two good teams at the end of the day.
Biggest X factor in this series for you?
Kemper.
Yeah. It's got to be, right? I mean, those are probably the most question marks.
Yeah, it's the only thing that I can see
here. As much as Binnington had his up and down season, he's a guy who has played in the pressure of the playoffs before, has won a Stanley Cup, so I don't know if you're all that worried. And really, ever since coming in for Husso in round one, has looked outstanding. And then Darcy Kemper gets injured in that first round series. What's that effect like here on round two? I know he's had some time to rest, which is a good thing for the Avalanche and for him, but I just don't see how it isn't the biggest question mark going into round two. And I think it was the question mark around the Avalanche all season, as good as their team was their goaltending good enough to get them 16 wins in the playoffs? Well, they've got four, and I think all eyes will be on the Kemper and Binnington matchup as we enter this series.
Well, and that was how much of that was the talk this offseason too for Colorado. They had all that cap space, and what were they going to do? And was Philip Grubauer going to be the guy going forward, right? He was the UFA, and we were still waiting to see what kind of long-term deal they might hammer out. And I think they surprised a lot of people, Will, when they let Grubauer go to Seattle. It looks like a good decision now, but the pressure's still on Darcy Kemper and all of this as a UFA at 32 years old. who's never been in these sort of situations. With all due respect to him, he just hasn't played for franchises that have been to this point. And while Binnington might not have played as well as Kemper has at points this year, I think your point is a good one about the fact that he's been there and done this. He's been to this pressure point before. Really, what's the only unproven on this Colorado team? And in my mind, it's Darcy Kemper. I don't have a hard time having faith in Taves and Makar and, you know, Bowen Byram on the back end or McKinnon Landeskog. I know what I'm going to get from those guys, but Darcy Kemper is new to this sort of battle, and the Avalanche have put, I would say, all their chips in on him, because I don't think Pavel Francouz is nearly the option as, say, a Ville Husso or a Marc-Andre Fleury, Cam Talbot sort of split was. I don't think that if Colorado's down 2-1 in this series, you see them all of a sudden go, you know what, we're going to change. We're going to put Francouz in for Kemper. It's not that sort of conversation. It's simply on, can Darcy Kemper be the guy? And that, to me, is going to be the biggest question mark in this series.
Two things. Fan feedback line always open to you. 960-960. All the pressure is on the Avalanche boys, 1,000%. I think everybody's waiting for them to get over the hump. Everyone thinks this is the year they finally do it. I don't know if I would say all the pressure is on them, but I certainly think that they're a team that is expected to get there. And I think they will. I really do think that if I look at it, I would say the Avalanche find a way to get things done in this second round series. Will and Logan, can you guys please bring back Michigan Monday? Would love to hear Phil's thoughts on beating the Leafs. I do think we can get that rolling. We might bring that out tomorrow, reflect on game one of this series. So I don't know what Logan's thoughts are. It was certainly a Pat and Will baby, and I'd have to tack the Steinberg.
I was going to say, we might have to get the
make sure that it's all right.
The approval
we
from
take
Dad.
That because again, that was a Steinberg and Nault type thing. But I think we could find a way to bring back Michigan Monday. I certainly think there would be many that would love to hear not only Phil's thoughts, but would like to hear what Michigan has to say.
Phil's got a lot of thoughts. Series.
Yeah, certainly under his breath, he's like that drunk uncle you watch.
Whether
game
they
with.
Can be. Put out in the English language is another factor, but he certainly has thoughts, and they'll be mumbled at you.
Do you want to make some predictions on this round?
Let's do it.
All right. You step to the plate, sir. Let's start with Florida-Tampa. I will take the Florida Panthers in seven. I think it's not going to be easy to eliminate the Lightning, but I think that we're looking at a Lightning team that is just going to run out of gas. I think we saw that a little bit in the Toronto series, thanks to Vasilevskiy, and certainly credit to them for shutting it down to win game 6 and 7 against Toronto. But I think Florida is a different animal, certainly deeper than the Maple Leafs, especially up front. No Braden Point to begin the series, I think, is a massive loss for Tampa. I have to take 7 games because I don't think it's going to be easy to eliminate the Lightning, but I'll take the Florida Panthers in this series. And yeah, we'll go 7 games because I don't think it's going to be easy.
Yeah, I'm going Lightning in 7. Everything I've seen about this Tampa team and the Braden Point injury does worry me, because I think he's so key to this group in a lot of ways, but they've dealt with injuries before, and that next man up mentality is strong in Tampa Bay. I'm just at the point with this Lightning group where, honestly, until someone beats them, I'm going to have a hard time picking against them. I got Lightning in 7 here. I think the point that Joe Smith brought up with us is the biggest one why I'm picking Tampa Bay in this. I still don't trust Sergei Bobrovsky in all of this, and I've got a hell of a lot of faith in Andrei Vasilevskiy, who just continues to be a beast every single postseason. For me, that's the deciding factor in this, but again, 7 games, it's going to be a battle.
Why do you hate Sergei Bobrovsky?
I don't hate Sergei Bobrovsky.
You do. That's the takeaway I have there.
I don't
you hate
him.
Sergei.
I would appreciate some stability from a guy that makes...
I don't know what he said about the Gordon family, but I don't want to know. Because
million a year.
You do not like him.
I like Vasilevskiy more.
You do not like him. What about the other series that begins tonight? We'll start there. Actually, yeah, we'll start there. St. Louis and Colorado. I went first on Florida-Tampa, so the floor is yours on St. Louis and Colorado.
I will go Colorado in 6. I think that this is the closest Colorado can say in the last couple of years that they are, truly at the precipice of a Stanley Cup. They need to get through this second round and set up a matchup against either Alberta team. And I just think that, as that one texter said, I think there's a lot of pressure on them, but I think they're built for this. They're a healthy group. I think having some days off to get Darcy Kuemper healthy after the end of that Nashville series was key. Jared Bednar, I think at this point, after having a couple playoff runs under his belt, will have used that time wisely. I don't think this is a group that's going to, you know, show up lazily tonight because they've been off for the last week and finished their series early. I have a lot of respect for St. Louis. They really surprised me this year. I wondered where this group was heading after they got swept by Colorado last year, but I can't see Colorado bowing out in the second round. I think that'd be a disaster for them.
I'm with you. You're a copycat, quite frankly, but that's okay. I take the Avalanche in six as well. I just think that they're too much for St. Louis. I love what the Blues have done. I think Craig Berube and company should be very proud of what they've accomplished and what they continue to build there. But I just think the Avalanche are too much. I think they're that next step up. I know there's some questions about their goaltending, but I think Darcy Kuemper is going to be able to handle it just fine. It's not going to be easy. I'm not taking them in four or five games, but I do think it's going to be done in six. I'll take the Avalanche to advance to the Western Conference Final for the first time with this core group, and excited to see what that means for them in the NHL's Final Four. Before the break, just really quickly, Rangers and Carolina Hurricanes.
I'm going to go Hurricanes in six. I think they're a deeper team. I think that they're a team that can present a lot of trouble to this New York team. I gotta admit, I picked the Rangers in round one, and they got there, but I'm not sure I loved the fashion that they got there. It took a lot of key injuries for Pittsburgh to get New York back in that series, and while I can't discredit them for that, it still takes work, and it's still a battle to get there. I was expecting a little bit more out of them. I thought they would handle Pittsburgh a little easier than they did, and that worries me against a really... I think of similar team to Pittsburgh in the way that Carolina plays structured hockey with good veterans that know how to win at this time of the year. So I don't love this matchup for the Rangers. I think Carolina's... I'm worried about the goaltending still in all of this, but I think Hurricanes in six is where I'm going to go.
I'm going to go on the other side of that. I'm going to go Rangers in six. I think that they had their first round stumble. I think that that's going to be enough to kind of wake that group up. I know Pittsburgh had some injuries that maybe led to the Rangers being able to come back in that series. But being down 3-1, rallying to win it in seven games, yeah, it took overtime. Yeah, it took a power play. But I think the Rangers are a team that has just been so good in the second half of the year. We saw that carry over a little bit in the playoffs. Again, the first round stumble early on was a little bit worrisome, but I like the way they were able to figure things out, and I think that carries over into round two. Carolina, I just don't know if I'm sold on that group overall, especially at goaltending with Antti Raanta. If they can get Freddie Anderson back at some point in this series, that certainly will help them. But I'll take the Rangers to do this in six games. Carolina is never an easy out. Might even take seven, but I'll take the Rangers in six. And finally, Battle of Alberta. We'll save those predictions for tomorrow on the program. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. That'll do it for segment number two, an hour number two. Don't forget to be listening during Flames Talk for the Flames' spiciest moment. It's brought to you by Bacardi Spiced Rum. We'll take a break, come back with headlines right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.